that's like blues based, you know, British invasion blues, you know, it's pretty much what it is. So I think,
and I remember like hearing recently, sorry to cut you off, my dude, but, I remember hearing recently that, people have been saying that, the skill level that musicians have nowadays is like so incredibly insane, compared to, you know, back in the 70s or 60s or whatever. Because people have all these tools to look through, you know, like all these videos they can learn from and, you know, all these learning tools at their disposal. And, you know, so you just have like really insane musicians that you and me will probably never be.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's totally true. But, you know, it's just it's the same thing in sports or anything like that. Once there's, you know, there's people that have broken boundaries that have, invented new things in music and pioneered like this and that that you have to draw from. And you can go online and you can watch, you know, a performance from 69 of, you know, Hendrix or something like that, or you can watch, you know, Eddie Van Halen rip the Eruption solo, you can learn that, you know, anything. So you have this vast knowledge of all the things that people laid down before as far as music goes to draw from. So you can, and you can pick any fucking genre now, you know. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't know if I can swear on this, but
oh dude, you can say fuck, you can say shit, I don't care.
But there's so much fucking music out there that, you know, you can take an influence from all these different things. You know, if you want to do, you know, Afrobeat stuff like how you know, Paul Simon did, and bring like an African beat into rock and pop music or something like that. You have it all there at your fingertips, and hopefully the one thing people don't stop doing is writing incredible songs, because that's the most important part, because, you know, the production, the everything, but songs are the thing that lasts forever, that people are gonna recover and play forever on the radio, you know?
Yeah, I feel like maybe musicians nowadays kind of get caught up in the minutiae of like learning technique and, you know, being really good at mixing and really good at mastering and really good at, you know, having a sick guitar tone and all this, but like at the end of the day, none of that matters if you don't have a good song, you know.
It also gets tougher though to write a good song, because if you think about it, pretty much every song's already been written. You know, you can't use any different chord changes, and you probably can't use any different words than other people. You have to rearrange them different. It's how it all comes together. There's always something to be said, and you know, I just hope that, you know, that kids keep continuing to strive to create good music, because you used to have to be really good. I don't think you necessarily have to be really good anymore to get, you know, because you can, I could really go on here and fake a lot of stuff on my computer if I wanted to, you know. Like, I really don't, I could steal loops and do whatever I wanted to, and, you know, I mean, I don't know.
One might argue, though, that those tools have actually helped people write songs that maybe they aren't capable of playing but have the vision for.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, that's an interesting thought, too. Like, I remember I had a coworker of mine that, like, was not a music dude. He was just, like, you know, just coworker, listens to, like, rap and hip-hop and shit. And he was saying, like, you know, a lot of people hate auto-tune, but, like, he said, if you have a vision and, you know, there's some note you can't sing, but that's the note that's going to work for that and give the emotion you want, then I think you should be able to do that. And I was like, that's a cool way to look at it. And I remember I was 17 hearing that, and I was like, that's really cool, you know?
I mean, really, the floodgates are open to do whatever you want, you know? You don't
have...
every avenue is going to have people that are going to complain about what you're doing or how you're doing it. So just do whatever makes you happy, because, you know, like I said, and it's not, you know, you do it for yourself, but, you know, it's up to other people to tell you if it's good or not. And if people like it, then you can't really say it's bad, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, and what you said earlier about like everyone's, you know, every song's ever already been written. You know, I always say it doesn't matter, you know, just write the song that you know, you need to write or want to write, or because, you know, every song's been written, but not every song's been written by you, and you know, you have that unique, you know, take on it, or that you know, that personal connection to it. And I think that, you know, music in general is all about connecting.
Yeah, I mean, I think even, you know, if you think about the Beatles, they do the Come Together, that Here Come All flat Top, He Come Grooving Up Slowly. I'm pretty sure that's a somebody's gonna get mad at me if I say the wrong thing, but I think it's a Chuck Berry line, you know.
Probably,
you know, but what are you gonna do? Is that not super awesome? And is it an homage to something else? Yeah, you know, you can't sit at a piano and write a brand new chord progression. You just can't, you know. But if you use it and you say something different with it and people like it, then there's nothing bad about that.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting because, like, that, if you think about it, like, you know, say they, like, you know, kind of borrowed that line or whatever, it's kind of like, you know, how hip-hop artists will sample things and, you know, make something new out of it, you know, like the Beastie Boys or Kanye or, you know, whoever.
I mean, it's not just it's not even just hip-hop bands. Like, the other day I was driving in that the song by The Verve, you know, Bittersweet Symphony, you know, that song, it's a like that's, so they never made any money off of that song until recently because they lifted that sample from like a like alternate recording of a Rolling Stones tune. Right. So it was just a straight sample of that, and you know, but it's an amazing song. It's way better than that whatever version of, you know, you can't always get what you want or whatever song that was.
But which makes me think: do you have any artists that you think have covered a song better than the original artist? I'll throw one out there first.
Go for it.
So I don't forget it. I think Joe Cocker did a way better version of Get By with a Little Help with My Friends than the Beatles did.
Did we just become best friends? Because I ask this to people all the time. I think that's the second greatest cover of all time.
What's the first?
All Along the Watchtower, Jimi Hendrix is the greatest cover of all time. And it's a Bob Dylan song, and it's just too good. And it's way different than the Dylan version. And Dylan even just plays that version now. He's just like, well, that's his song, you know. And
right.
I think those are the top two. There are some really, really good ones out there, you know. And you have to say, well, like, well, and that's actually that. I'm pretty sure that arrangement of Little Help from My Friends is a Leon Russell arrangement. So, you know, that ba-dum-bum-bum, like, it's right. Totally different, changing the whole fucking song, you know?
Yeah, it gave it more, like, a soulful and, like, mellow vibe, whereas the Beatles version was, like, trying to be, like, upbeat and shit.
Yeah.
And I feel like the Joe Cocker one just had way more impact.
Yeah.
You know, and that, you know, it's cool to see how, like, one person will hear a song and be like, nope, this has to be like this.
Yeah. I mean, I think the another one that's up there is one of the best covers of all time is Respect by Aretha Franklin is an Otis Redding tune. And
is that the R-E-S-P-E-C-T?
Yes, sir.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's an Otis Redding tune. So, like, you know, it's just, you know, but then again, there's always like covers that, you know, you really like, you know, Gary Jewell's version of Mad World is like an incredible cover. It's probably one of the,
right.
You know, it's, you know, the Tears for Fears version is good, but like that is an incredible.
Is that the one that was like on all the Gears of War commercials or whatever?
Yes, it was. And it was in, I think it may have been on the soundtrack for Donnie Darko.
I remember that too.
Yeah, so I think that's another one, but that's another list. You got to do a top 10 list for that.
Holy shit, you know? Yeah, it's a good idea.
I was like,
I think you're gonna have to help me with that.
I'm for it. We could go tag team on that list.
Yeah, we could body it,
because there's really good ones that you're just not even thinking about that are, because I have thought about it, and I'm forgetting all the other ones right now that I've thought about in the past, but but that's the coolest thing about when you write a good song. You know, another list I like to do is like, what are the greatest songs like in modern popular culture? You know, not just you know, rock songs and stuff, but you think like, yeah, like Imagine by John Lennon is probably up there, and you know. Somewhere Over the Rainbow, or you know, Smile, or like any of these
Runaway by Kanye West. Just to add to the cover list, I think that Tennessee Whiskey by Chris Stapleton, that is a great cover.
Yep, that is a great cover. So who did that one originally?
No idea. Yeah. Some dude way before Chris, you know.
Well, you know, Joe Cocker is one of those guys. All his tunes are covers, but they're so incredible. You know, they're always written by somebody else. And he's always redoing stuff. Another person that I like to listen to, I don't know if you've heard of her, but she was a singer in the 70s. But Linda Ronstadt, I think I mentioned her earlier. She was like the first like pop idol queen kind of, but she had like a country twang, but she always did other people's tunes, and she always just made them awesome. But she's doing, you know, she's doing Eagles tunes, and she's doing Randy Newman songs, and you know, stuff like that, and they're always really good.
Like, well, it's interesting too, because like big bands back then did covers, like the Beatles, a lot of their songs were covers at first, you know.
Well, a lot of those bands, they were jukebox bands, because you know, you were in a club or something like that, you'd have a band playing all top 40 stuff. So that's how you cut your teeth. That's how you learned how to be a band. Even the Rolling Stones, their first bunch of hits were, you know, just American blues covers. And then both bands decided to, well, there's a lot more money in writing my own songs. So,
yeah, I think a lot of it also had to do with the whole British invasion thing, where it's like, oh, well, you know, we're going to play in America, so we've got to play those American bops, yeah?
But the funny thing is that the people in America didn't care about that music anymore, and it was, like, super treasured in England, you know, Muddy Waters and, like, Howlin' Wolf and all those guys. And when the British guys came back, it became popular music, and the little white kids in the United States had no idea what this music, this blues music was. And, you know, so it's a circle, you know? It takes, you know, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, just the way this country is built, and you know, institutional racism and things like that have to do with the music industry and stuff like that, you know. So it took, you know, it being legitimized by foreign people for people to understand. That's why you see Muddy Waters on The Last Waltz, because, you know, Muddy didn't make a ton of money over his career. You know, it was tough going in the record business then. But then you got one of the biggest bands in the world that asked you to come up there because they listened to your stuff, and that was like your fundamental thing of rock and roll.
Yeah, and I guess that also like makes me think of like, I think there was this one group of people that were a band that did basically like all the Motown hits or whatever.
The Wrecking Crew?
And I think so. I don't remember the name.
Like,
honestly,
the studio musicians that recorded on all those songs?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Wrecking Crew.
Okay. Yeah, so it was like they were the, like, you know, the dudes that, you know, pioneered that sound or whatever.
And all sorts of sounds, like well, I don't know if the Wrecking Crew was a little bit later in Motown, but they played all the stuff on like Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys. And,
oh shit, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, they were there's a guy, interesting fact, if you should, there's a documentary you should watch about the Wrecking Crew, but Tommy Tedesco was the lead guitar player in the Wrecking Crew, and he's from Niagara Falls. And he played not only on all those tunes, but all the TV shows. So like anytime you heard Bonanza, like ding 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 ding, he played the Batman theme song, you know, all those kind of things that are like
that one.
Yeah, and he's the most recorded guitar player of all time. And
that's awesome.
Right here from Niagara Falls. And you know, it's an incredible legacy, you know, especially all those studio guys. There's so many incredible people that played on all those records. And, you know, there's the Motown guys, there was the you know, that, and then there was the Stax Records guys, who all ended up being the Blues Brothers band.
Right.
Yeah, you know, which is another incredible movie, and it's only because all those guys played on all those records. You talk, you know, I say the, you know, Aretha Franklin Respect. They played on both that one and the Otis Redding version, I'm pretty sure. You know.
Right. So also, just to touch on, you mentioned the Beach Boys, and I remember my dad, another thing that he used to watch for months straight was like some Beach Boys things, and it was cool seeing how the Beach Boys was basically Brian Wilson, and then everyone else just played whatever he wrote, and at least that's what I got from it, but yeah, so it was kind of like, all right, Brian Wilson's the dude calling the shots, and then everyone else is touring while he's, like, you know, coming up with new music and trying to innovate things and, you know, also becoming, like, a sick recording engineer in the process.
Yeah, and really pushing the boundaries. And that's the cool thing, too, is that the whole kind of friendly rivalry between
him, like, and the Beatles, right?
Them and the Beatles, and, you know, one hears Pet Sounds like, oh, man, then one makes, you know, Sgt. Pepper, and then, you know, you have all these bands that are pushing each other and doing cool new things, and it's like, how do you even do that in a recording situation? When the Beatles started, you know, they're recording on, like, an 8-track, like, mixer with knobs instead of faders, and...
Right.
And... you know, it's Buddy Holly a few years before that figuring out how to, you know, overdub and do different kinds of things, or spin the tape backwards and do a reverse solo over this, or bring this kind of instrument in. You know, it was a crazy time, and pushing the boundaries with what I'm sure
I heard,
with what I'm sure all of us would consider primitive equipment.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
super. I remember, there was some story that Brian Wilson was, like, driving somewhere, and he didn't release Pet Sounds yet. And, because from what I know, he released Pet Sounds, like, I don't know, like a decade after he started writing it. But he was in the middle of, like, working on it. And then apparently he heard Strawberry Fields by the Beatles, and then was just like, that's it. They went for the sound that I got.
Yeah, I think that was the Smile record. Because, right. Yeah, no, it makes total sense. He lived in a sandbox for, like, the next 15 years or something like that, but...
Yeah, he was like, fuck music.
he had issues and stuff, but, you know, that's what fame will do to you, I guess. But, yeah, just that pushing, and I'm starting to kind of, for the first time, you know, I've been around the Buffalo, just, you know, small potatoes, but the Buffalo music scene for a little bit, and when I first started out, it was very competitive. It was still at the age where you could, like, get a record contract, and you could, right. You could, like, go on tour, and you could probably still be on this thing called MTV that they had, but,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was an actual legit thing. Like, you know, bands that I was coming up with, you know, just, like, Cute Is What We Aim For was playing, and they toured all over the place, and, you know, Every Time I Die was just, like, getting going big time, and it was like, you could really do it out of this town, but then
right. Everything
really changed, and the music climate's so different now, that it's really not a possibility that way. I mean, you can still get super famous, but you're not going to get a record contract to do it. You can just make really good music on your computer, or, you know, record it how we do and promote it through the internet. But I think since that's kind of come around, it's the scene here in town has gotten so much more collaborative, and people play on more of each other's things, and, you know, bands come and go, but everybody's kind of in each other's bands, and we're, like, the shows are being better attended, and everybody's having more fun kind of thing, and, you know, we're probably making less money, or it's less about money now, but, you know, I think it's good for music. I think you give a few more years of that, you might get some really good, especially the wealth of talent in Buffalo, New York is absolutely ridiculous. And
yeah, there's a lot of really sick musicians, you know,
yeah.
Especially in that jam band arena or whatever.
Well, a lot of people can, I mean, until all this came around, all this, you know, Corona stuff that we're dealing with, there's a lot of people just living on playing music. And there's very few towns in America where you can actually, like, either support a family or just have a decent living. You know, you can play guitar in a corner at a restaurant three nights a week and make a good amount of money, and then still have a band and maybe have all this other stuff and record. And there's good studios here, and there's really good musicians. Like, I don't see why somebody would leave Buffalo to go pursue a music career when you pretty much have all the tools that you need here. Yeah, you're not going to get signed by a record label, but, you know, you don't need to be in New York to do that, you know.
Right.
Because who even knows how that works anymore? You know, it's just about getting as many people to see your stuff, whether it's through the internet or your shows or however you can gain that buzz that's so important, you know?
Maybe buy beer, you know?
Beer and a little watered down whiskey, which is getting towards the end here, which is good.
Yeah. I mean, we're like towards the end anyway. I usually try and keep it, you know, around an hour, and we've been going for about that.
Oh man. So. I mean, I could talk forever, but.
Oh dude, I know. But yeah, I don't know. Do you want to, you kind of already spoke to other musicians, but I feel like this podcast to me is just, I don't care if people that don't play music listen to this. You know, the audience for me is like other musicians. So,
right.
You know, is there anything you want to say to other musicians as far as like anything, whether it's, songwriting or promoting your band or, you know, marketing or, you know, just general advice or whatever?
I mean, for me, I think the most important thing and the thing that attracts me to other artists and stuff is just be honest, be authentic. You know, I think there's a lot of fakery that happens, and I don't really like it. I don't, you know, I just, the things that are the, that resonate the most with me are songs that are original, people that play from the heart, that are an original person. Everybody's got their own thing. It may be somebody who's better at guitar than you or a better singer, but it's the whole thing put together. And when you see some of those people, and there's a lot of people in this town, my friend Grace Logan, who's a guitar player, is just one of those original people where you just see them and you're like, there's nobody else like that. She's just being right. herself. Like, she has these influences, but you can tell, I can tell her guitar. You know,
is she the one that like does all the gnarly guitar faces in Grosh?
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
Yes. And she's an incredible songwriter too. Like, you know, she writes a lot of the songs in that band. And, you know, there's a lot of people like that just kind of blow me away. And it's, you know, my friend, it's another Grace who is really close with Grace Logan, Grace Stumberg, who's an incredible songwriter from right here in Buffalo. And she's traveled, both of them have together have traveled the world in, you know, Grace Stumberg has sang at Royal Albert Hall with, you know, famous people. You know, it's insanity. And, but you know, she could be sitting by a bonfire with an acoustic guitar and just like blow me away. And, you know, it's what it is. It's just find your voice, find what makes you special. Cause everybody's got it, you know, no matter what your skill level is, you'll find your thing that makes you unique to everybody else. And I think if everybody strived to do that as opposed to trying to sound like somebody else, I think we'll keep going. I have a lot of faith in people. So just be authentic and tell the truth, you know, just be yourself.
That's beautiful, man. I think that's a good place to end it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, John.
All right. Hell yeah, I had a good time.
I'm glad you had me on, man. I not like I need an excuse to slam three beers and some whiskey, but, you know.
Yeah, man. But all right, you know, say goodbye to the listeners and, you know, all that.
Sounds good. Well, thanks, guys, for tuning in. I'm glad you had me on, John. And, you know, and I've been telling as many people as I can about this because this is super nice long format kind of thing to talk about, you know, how you do your thing. And it means a lot because nobody ever asked me like, oh, you know, any of these questions that you would ask me. They'd usually ask me like, when's your next gig? Like what are your plans? Like, you know,
yeah,
it's like, I don't know, but I know I like to talk about music, so this is, yeah, this is great, like, dude.
I started this, yeah, to like kind of explore like what I think other musicians want to hear, and you know, it's all the questions that I've always wanted to ask people,
yeah,
and you know, I think it's cool. I don't think many people are doing it.
I don't think anybody's doing it.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that you're, you know, telling people about it. That means a lot.
Yeah, man. And I did listen to that cooler one specifically, and I thought that was really cool. That's a cool band too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there's it's a lot.
They're a cool band.
Oh my god, yeah, that was a whole thing during that. You don't even think about it.
Yeah.
No, I bet you nobody even says anything other than cool. Like you're like, oh, it's an awesome band. It's just probably subconscious there.
Hell yeah. Yeah.